Hello, I am Ariel Munafo.
And I am Moshe Ferber.
And this is the Silver Lining Podcast.
The podcast about security engineering.
Hello everyone, another episode of Silver Lining Podcast. And with me, as always, Moshe. How are you, Moshe?
Very good. Good morning, Ariel. Good to see you.
Good to see you too. And with us, Alex. Hi, Alex. How are you?
Hi, doing well. Pleasure to be here, Ariel and Moshe. I know I've been wanting to come over for a while. Great to be here.
Yeah, actually, I think for 2 years we've been trying to get you
yes,
here.
Yes, we have. Playing hard to get.
So finally you're here. So let's dive in. Introduce yourself, Alex, for a couple of minutes.
Of course. Pleasure to be here. I'm Alex. I'm CISO at RiseUp, and I'm 31 from Tel Aviv, just recently married, and great to be here.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I hope.
Yeah. Indeed.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, about your background.
Of course. So I love cloud security, and I worked mostly in financial services companies. I've been working in a credit card companies, banks, fintechs. My most recent company was Tipality, where I had it security, and I love absolutely everything financial technology, cybersecurity, cloud security. And I also work with the CSA on the Top Cloud Threats Group, which you're familiar.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about this work. I mean, I know that you're part of the Top Threats and a working group. I know that you've been part of some of the research that the Cloud Security Alliance has been issuing. Can you tell us a little bit what you're working on these days?
Of course. So the Cloud Security Alliance, where we are colleagues, you being the head of the Israeli chapter, mm-hmm. And I co-lead the CSA Top Threats. So the Top Threats, the Top Cloud Threats, of course, working group is a research working group where we research cloud threats, cloud vulnerabilities, cloud controls, and most importantly, we devise insights in papers such as the Egregious 11 or the Cloud Threat Modeling or the Cloud Penetration Testing Playbook to help the industry align with best cloud security practices so that cloud technologies can be adopted more securely.
Okay, so now you're working on the latest research. I recently saw a survey that you're planning to see what are the next threats, right? I'm not sure when this episode will be released, but tell us a little bit about what is going to be the next release.
Of course. So the next release is a spoiler. We just decided on a name. It's going to be the Pandemic 11. We have a gimmick with names. We try to keep them hip. The last one was Egregious 11, the one before that. Treacherous 12. And so why the number? Just a little spoiler. We always see a drop off after a certain number of questions. So how do these surveys work, right? And what is the top threats? It's the top threats, vulnerabilities, and security issues that experts in the industry are concerned for. So it is not necessarily a threat. So data breaches, cloud data breaches, is not a threat, right? It's more of an impact. But still, we go to the industry, go to the people, to the experts, and we ask them, what are you most concerned with? And then we come up with the data, we analyze it, we align controls to it. And so this year, we've had the drop off after 11 cloud threats again. And I can already tell you what the first one is, and it is not data breaches as it has been in recent years. We can see that the industry is maturing. The vendors have provided technologies, the cloud security, the cloud service providers have, you know, fine-tuned the controls around default configurations of S3 buckets. So the number one is no longer data breaches. It is identity, credential access, and key management for cloud services. And the rest you're going to have to read when it's out.
Okay. And the release date is supposed to be? Do you have an idea?
We are going for RSA, so that's quite a while from now. I think we are 4 or 5 months away. And soon to come.
Okay. Right. So thank you for your contribution to the community. I know how valuable this is. And you're currently the CISO for RiseUp. Tell us a little bit more about RiseUp and what do you do there?
Absolutely. So I am responsible for security at RiseUp. RiseUp, we are a financial services company in Israel, but most specifically, we're aiming to help Israelis today, grow financially. So what is Rise Up about? It's really a company with a mission, which is a first for me coming from banking and from credit card companies. It's a company with a mission, and Rise Up is about helping people grow financially. And what does that mean? Rise Up believes that you need two things for financial growth. One is, safe capability, being confident in your finances, and cash flow, bringing in more that you expand, just like in the game, cash flow, And the second is being able to save up. And so those are the two things we tackle today. We help you gain control over your expenses. We connect to your credit card account, your bank account. We pull all that data in and we give you one number. So you're used to Excel sheets. I know I am. Being security, you do security with Excel sheets, right? And so Rise Up just gives you that one magic number, which is your cash flow. You got to keep it positive, and then you can use that excess to build up savings, and then you can possibly transfer that into assets, right? And that's what Rise Up does. And what I do at Rise Up is I help secure all that enterprise, help build trust with our clients. And we try to do that very, very transparently. And so we're going to have a security webinar, my first tomorrow, with our customers and our community. And we're going to start being a lot more transparent about how we do things. And I'm happy to take this opportunity to share more on the tech side, because tomorrow is going to be with our customers and our community is going to be less technical.
Okay, so before we dive into the to how you do this, basically Rise Up is relying on the fact that we do more and more open banking, right? This is like a buzzword that we keep hearing when we talk about fintech companies. Can you tell us a little bit more what is open banking and how is it dispersed globally?
Absolutely. So open banking is an initiative, a government initiative usually, which aims to improve competitiveness, services, integrations in the industry with initially banks, but also credit card companies, insurance companies, and more. And what the issue wasn't with open banking is that traditional financial institutions were not so open with innovative players, with fintechs, and with financial data service providers, which is quite different to fintechs. We'll dive into that in a second. But we can see that Israel is actually a bit late to the party, which is surprising to me. I was raised on technology in Israel and always believed that we always lead the charge in innovation there. But actually, Europe and the European Union with the GDPR and whatnot, the PSD2, were actually the ones to lead open banking in the world. And they said, hey, listen here, banks, you have to open up securely. You have to start supporting OAuth2 and identity federation protocols, and you have to let other players access the data of the customer so that those customers can be served better. They can access services that are better priced. They can access services that are unique because their data can now be accessed. And so Israel is really the second, third, fourth player to start opening it up. Actually, I'm very pleased to say that Rise Up had a pivotal role in helping that happen in Israel with the Knesset member, Moshe Bitan. And just the recent law that passed, Chok HaEsderim, that solidified that now you got to go live with the open banking, Bank Leumi, Bank Discount, all the financial institutions, rather than later. Well, the intent has been in Israel for a while. We can drill in into U.S. and others.
Yeah, so the idea is that the regulators think that the data belongs to the customers, it's not belongs to the banks themselves, so you need to open them up and give them access. If they want to allow some kind of fintech company to do stuff with the data, you need to open up and give them the ability to do this freely. I know that bank been trying to block it, they didn't give you the permission to provide password, they didn't provide any open APIs, so that's the idea. So I understand in Israel, so it's good to see that there is innovation in this space.
Can one word, the Bank Israel is also working around trying to push the open banking as much as they can. So I can say a good word for them hopefully they will continue.
Oh, yeah. Yes. And it's not just the Bank of Israel. Actually, as a financial data service company, Rise Up, we are to be regulated by the Reshut LeNiyarot Erech, by the sort of DFS of Israel. They're the ones who regulate a lot of the stock exchange services and the trading trading companies, and they've also been very helpful and very much pioneers of innovation in the field.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so can you give us a couple of words about what's going on in the UK, in the United States, in the EU about open banking?
Of course, and so this is interesting because I'm used to looking to other regions for innovation, particularly with finance. But really, the EU, the European Union, were the ones to push forward open banking with PSD1. I think it was 2008, and PSD2. I think it was 2018. And their statement was pretty basic. I'm open banking banks. You got to open up and let in more competition and better service, less expensive services, financial technologies. And then we look at the U.S., not surprising, but in the U.S., the approach was a lot less centralized. So different states regulate their financial services and banking differently. There's less national direction on that. For example, the New York State DFS is a very strict regulator. And even then, they're an administrative regulator. They say how you got to protect your financial services, the data, the customers. But they don't say, hey, you got to open up. Mm-hmm. Some of the USA states and banks are the biggest in the world, and they open up to the degree that they want to, right? So Visa and Citibank are more out there in terms of innovation, but other particularly regional banks in the U.S. are huge. They're bigger than all of our Israeli banks, right? They usually don't, right? The Citizen Bank in Massachusetts, they serve, you know, probably more customers than our local banks combined, and they haven't heard of open banking yet.
Okay, so it still works to be done, but the EU is probably leading the pack, and as privacy laws in the United States, it started like initiative in each state, but they probably will be doing something federal later on, so hopefully that will be the case for the financial services. Can you tell us a little bit what does it mean to be financial data services? I mean, what type of services you give to your customers? So you mentioned cash flow. What do you do with the banks? I mean, what type of data do you collect, and what type of information you provide to customers?
Of course. So I've learned in recent years that there are fintechs, there are financial companies, like banks and Finastra, and then there are financial data service providers or financial data service companies, which is RiseUp, right? We do not do payments. We do not give you a loan. We do not compete with an insurance company. So we take your financial data, we assess it, and we give you value on top of that, right? So what RiseUp does at its core is help you gain visibility and control over your finances, saying, hey, I looked at all of your data. You don't need to do any Excel sheet magic. You are out X money a month. You're in Y dollars a month. Your current cash flow is plus 2,000. Good, make it better, open a saving account with it, but I'm not going to give you the savings or the insurance, right? So financial data services, and that's a new regulated term in Israel, and there's a similar one in the UK. We really did not invent that. We were a lot inspired by the Berlin Group and the PSD2, and they have their own term for that. It's AIS, but for us in Israel, it's financial data service provider. We analyze the data.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's dive in. I mean, in order to be a fintech company, you need to build trust. First of all, you need to build trust with the regulators, with the consumers, and with the banks. Let's start with the banks. I mean, you're a young company, you're a startup, you don't have the manpower, you don't have the budget, but still you need to work with the bank. You need to prove them that you can protect their data. How does this work?
Absolutely. So no surprise there. Banks have their own standard and rigid vetting protocols. If you want to work with a bank, whew, good luck, right? you got to do the vetting. You got to answer questionnaires. You got to have an ISO or a SOC. And if you don't, you wish you had, right? But there's an upside to all of that. I mean, right now they're interested in this innovation. And so they want to help you grow. They're not using it as a deal turner, as a deal closer, to turn you away. So you actually stand to benefit from this vetting, right? As a younger company, although RiseUp being 4 years old, 60 strong, bringing a CISO in and investing so much, working with the banks still pulls you up. So what you experience is, as a company, is there'll be vetting, there'll be lots of discussions. It'll be a lengthy process. We're talking about months, sometimes years. And there'll be penetration testing involved, which is great. There'll be an audit involved, which is great for me, right? It's free security, basically. And so at the end of the process, you're still both on the same boat, whether they like it or not, right? We very much do. You reach a state where they vet you for a certain degree of integration. And the vetting grows the more integration or the more data you process together. Mm-hmm. So that's a gradual process.
Okay. You mentioned questionnaires. I mean, how many of the banks sent you the CCM as a questionnaire or as some kind of form of the CCM? Or we still need to do market education in this niche?
I did not see a CCM yet. From any bank in Israel, but you know, we don't have lots of bank in Israel. I'm used to seeing CCM almost weekly. So at Tipalti, I used to process about 20 VSAs a month, and at least 5 of them would be CCM, and the ones that are not CCM would be based on CCM or very similar questions. And I definitely would like to see the CSA STAR program and the questionnaire adopted more. I'm very much used to it.
Yeah, well, maybe I started there wrong. I need to first explain what the CCM. CCM is a cloud control matrix. It's basically the CSA is trying to produce one spreadsheet that will be the foundation for those questionnaires. So when you're a SaaS company, instead of getting hundreds of questionnaires with different formats, different questions, they try to direct you into one format, which is better for everyone in the market.
Because, the cake, right? Mm-hmm. It's the cake, the questionnaire cake.
Yeah, the CCM is basically the list of controls, and from the list of control, you derive the cake, which is basically more of a yes and no type of questions and not just a list of
it's controls. It's a lovely name. It goes down through way better than CCM. It's a cake.
Yeah. Okay, so this is trust with banks. Tell us a little bit about consumers. I mean, again, you need to give the consumers some kind of sense of trust because you're providing them access. You're getting access to their data. How do you do that?
Absolutely. So I am fairly new to the world of B2C, right? Business to consumer. And so this is a very pleasant journey for me. I'm rediscovering a lot about security with regard to, you know, people, consumers. And so firstly, we got to remember that trust is a feeling, which I had to rediscover, right? Trust is a feeling. You could see, you could invest all that money, all that effort into controls and hardening and ISO, and then you'll see an exchange on Facebook. Yeah, I know Yuval, the CEO, I trust him, that's it. Like, come on, what's this effort for, right? And with that in mind, we believe in our clients and we trust our clients, and we don't treat them as people who can't process security. You know, they know their concern for data. They know that we should be regulated. We know that we should be regulated. We know they're interested in our security controls. So what do you do to build trust with them, right? First, you have to be very, very, outspoken. You have to have your security documentation out there. It has to be in language that they can understand. Your community managers and your support engineers need to speak security. So I train them, I devise messaging. I go out to our Facebook on my own and I respond to messaging and I build that trust. My CTO does, my CEO, they do speak security. You have to create opportunities for engagement, like our webinar tomorrow, where actually community members are going to come in, they've submitted questions, I'm going to answer them. You have to show good faith, right? So we give them tools, we give them knowledge, we allow them to ask us questions for their own personal, how do I store passwords? Like, it's the most common question I think we see. And it has very little to do with RiseUp. We're not 1Password, right? We're not KeePass. Yeah. And we help them in that end. Sometimes they have their credit card fraud, they have their credit card data stolen, and swiped in hotels, and we help them with that. So you have to show a lot of good faith, because trust essentially is a feeling, and it's not just about having this control or that standard. We are, however, working towards that end as well. I mean, you got to do both B2C and B2B when you want to be a fintech, and that's one of the challenges.
The webinar will be in English, Hebrew?
Come again?
The webinar, in which language?
It will be in Hebrew.
Ah, okay.
I recently helped Isaka build their auditor, cloud auditor knowledge certification. And, you know, when you build something that people need to learn from, so you have to really define the word trust. So I was really struggling on this. And I found out that there are types of trust. I mean, with the evidence, you work on the evidence-based trust. I ask you if you have a control, so you show that the evidence here is my control. And it's much more... We understand that. We can work with that. But as you said, with B2C, with consumers, it's more of a feeling. It's a mix of reputation and marketing and making sure that they think that they can trust you. And it's more like a very different state of mind with that. So it's a big challenge.
And, it is. Trust is not defined today. There's no research that says this is trust. There's like one book. Mm-hmm. I tackle the same issue and I can feel your challenge. We should talk about that.
Okay, so, and again, working with the regulators, I mean, they're a big player in this niche. How do you work with them?
And so, this is really exciting for me. Israel is just enacting its open banking right now. And so, this week was the due date for submission of comments for the Hora le-magishei rishayon, if you want to submit a license to be a financial data processor, a fintech with open banking in Israel, so you have to submit comments. You had the opportunity to submit comments on that. And you saw a lot of the requirements they've had. And so this is where we stand right now. And you can understand that they're open to feedback. They're asking for it, as they should, right? But you got to know where that feedback will be asked for. They have a website. It's not like they go in the news and say, hey, it's happening. No, you got to look for it. Right, and we do have a relationship with them, as you know, phone calls and back and forth. So they're very open to discussion. They're working with the banking industry, not just with the fintechs, right? So they're facilitating, and so that relationship is very positive. It's not cold.
Yeah, like a triangle that needs to work together.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so let's dive into the more technical side of things. How do you connect to a bank? I mean, you cannot really just, go to the website and use the password, right?
Oh, knock, knock in the door.
Oh, I wish. I mean, and just connecting to a bank does not mean you stay connected, trust me. So we have open banking being enacted right now in Israel. And so that's a very special time. We've already had, you know, fintechs and financial data service providers in Israel. So they were already connecting to banks such as Wise, but we're not the only player, right? And so that implies scraping because APIs are not yet available. APIs will be available in like June. They'll start to be available in like June. And so that involves scraping that may imply simulating an application, a mobile application that may imply simulating a browser, and that implies using user credentials, right? Risky, difficult, implies a lot of trust. And so you want to work with a bank, you want to engage with them, and you want to build trust with them, and you want to pass through their vetting protocols. But many, many players, especially young startups, would sometimes, you know, hope over that. And they just build an app, they just push it to an app store, they just set up a web service, and they'd start asking consumers for their credentials to their bank accounts. 2 days later, their Imperva web firewall of the bank closes you down, right? And you're out of business, and you may have just, you know, done your seed raising. What do you do now, right? And so all of that is slowly being pushed to back into history, and starting June we'll have APIs. But however, if you are a startup company, or if you're thinking of setting something up in, you know, a different region, which is interesting. I mean, you want to do business where there's a need, right? In Portugal, in China, in other places, this is the battle you'll be having, right? And so you'll need to be watching out for that.
Okay, so scraping is one option, not the preferred one. I mean, security community is also against providing passwords to everyone. How do you do this securely?
Right. So there's all the standard stuff you got to do, right? You have to be implicit about it. You have to be clear about what you're doing and allow the customer, the data owner, which is the customer, to make their decisions, you know. And some of our customers, some of customers of other companies decide not to do it, right? And it's perfectly fine. That's what I want. That's what we're about. Helping customer gain more control of their data. you got to do TLS, you got to do, you know, hardening, you got to store the secret securely. But because this is such a frowned upon practice, and I agree, right? I don't want to deal with passwords. I want those APIs. I want that oath too, right? Because you have to deal with passwords, you have to go one step above. So one thing, for example, that we're doing that we do advise, others do as well, in addition to the TLS, we also encrypt the password in the browser using JavaScript and asymmetric cryptography so that even if the TLS is stripped or even if there's some kind of failure on the mobile device or the laptop of the person enacting our website and our service, that password is still secure. And of course, you wanted to go one step farther with how you store that securely, but I think we're going to talk about that in a second.
Yeah, let's focus for a second on the connectivity with the banks, and then we talk about your back-end infrastructure.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned a couple of times OAuth. OAuth is a standard for authorization on API. It could be on other places, but for you, I guess the bank is pulling up some kind of an API, and you need to authorize against this API. That's the process?
Of course. So the desired state is where you have very little ownership of the authentication of the person, of the data owner, and that occurs between them and the bank, right? Just like you sign in with Gmail, right? Say if you you have a new Excel website and you want people to log in and you want to save yourself the trouble, what you'd like to do is implement the Google, you know, SDK and have people sign in with Google. So the person authenticates against Google. They prove that their identity to Google. Same with the banks. You want to deal with identities as little as you can as a financial services company. And that's what you want to do. In Israel, it's going to be a bit different. In Israel, the regulator intends for the financial services company to authenticate the person and then have them authenticate against the bank. So we'll have this double verification. There is still a discussion about that. And what's unique about Israel is that the authentication of the company, of the fintech company against the bank will be enacted. It seems like it will be enacted using certificates that are managed by the regulator. Okay. Which is quite unique, right? That was surprising to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it'll be...
So the regulator will build some kind of a trusted root trust authority. They will produce certificates to the different fintech companies, and the bank will approve that you are rise up based on the certificate signed by the regulator.
Absolutely. This is unique.
Yeah.
This is not the case, say, mm-hmm. in Europe, right? So in Europe, in England too, you want to authenticate against the bank and they have an API, they issue that key or that certificate, right?
Mm-hmm.
In Israel, it looks like our regulator is going to issue those certificates, be our certificate authority, right? Mm-hmm. And the bank will be trusting those certificates when we submit messages or requests for data signed with our certificate key. And the regulator expects the bank to trust that certificate, but also to implement controls for, say, if that certificate needs to be revoked.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's interesting because it puts the regulator as an operating body, which regulators really don't like that, but I guess they
surprising.
They take their call. So basically, but in the general scenario, the user needs to authenticate to you, need to get some kind of authorization from a bank, or authenticate to there and give some kind of permission to you. The bank understand that RiseUp is the right one because they either got a certificate from the regulator or the exchange certificate with the bank. And this is basically the triage process. I mean, the bank, the customer, and the fintech companies hold some kind of a trust between them, and then you can access the data. That's
absolutely
the idea.
Mm-hmm. The banks had an issue, right? They wanted little responsibility. And so I think this was part of the settlement of the make it earlier, right? The regulator assumes more of the responsibility for the certification of the companies, vetting of the companies, vetting of RiseUp. We're going to be the first or whichever applicant to the certificate for financial service provider. And the banks do their part earlier.
Okay. So let's talk, so I understand the connectivity. Let's talk a little bit about the infrastructure that the fintech companies are using. You're probably cloud-based, right? I mean, as a new company, tell us a little bit about the infrastructure. How do you do monitoring? How do you do cryptography? What does the architecture look like?
Of course. So as a an aspiring financial data services company, or even as a fintech, you know, in the past 4 to 8 years, you want to be cloud native, as to assume the least responsibility for, you know, operating servers and updating Microsoft SQL 2012. I'll bet you can't, because whatever. And so we go full serverless. We operate on containers. We have infrastructure as code, which is something I'm learning now. It's pretty cool, and it comes with its own set of challenges and its own set of opportunities.
Infrastructure as code?
Indeed, yes, like Terraform.
Okay. Infrastructure as code, okay.
Now yes, infrastructure okay. as code.
Mm-hmm.
And our whole front end, for example, is entirely cloud service provided. So we use CDN, we use AWS S3 to host our static assets, and we use even AWS CloudFront for our internet security headers, right? And so usually I'd have those headers set up in my IIS or in my web server or in another kind of application in my stack, but in RiseUp and in newer companies, you will have a lot of that non-business logic stuff implemented with a service, and then you can touch on less of the, you know, attack surface or the misconfiguration service.
Mm-hmm.
That of course comes with its own challenges. For example, it's very difficult to implement infrastructure as code for new stuff. While it's easy to redo it, new stuff. So I could set up a security header in 20 minutes on my own, you know, with AWS console, but infrastructure as code, it can take you a day, right?
Mm-hmm.
For security monitoring, we have a lot of emphasis on data security and access, right? A lot of trust is implied. And so we treat everything, every security control, every infrastructure decision that impacts security is one we have to describe to a client. So I think it was Jeff Bezos and Amazon. They had the empty chair in the room, and that chair is reserved for the client. And so that really is a decision we double down on. Whenever we deal with security, we have to do it up the standard that we feel comfortable enough telling a client about it. And hopefully we'll make it simple enough. And so for that, being a data and access-oriented or conscious company, we have a lot of monitoring around access, for example, for employees. So whenever anyone accesses data of a customer, for example, they're giving support to a customer. A customer calls us in and say, hey, I have an issue in my app. Or, hey, I think there's fraud for my credit card, right? So we have a mechanism for actually monitoring who can access the data of that person in our system. Same works for secrets in application terms and in human terms. And of course, there's all the security stuff. We do put a lot of emphasis on front-end monitoring and on data access, as we said. Should we talk cryptography?
Well, but I wanted to ask you, basically, in the end, all of this OAuth and magic and all of this relies to the how good you need to keep those OAuth tokens. I mean, this is the heart of everything. I mean, if I get access to that, I can access your bank account. How do you do that?
Well, my trick for a while has been using separation and two layers of encryption. And I'm very happy to see it repeat in RiseUp. And so a good practice is... yes, to use a dedicated secret storage, such as Vault or Kubernetes Secrets or Secrets Manager or another, right? But then it usually comes with the infrastructure management of the rest of your infrastructure. And so your DevOps or your, you know, database administrator could have access to it. So what do you do? Even though it's a Kubernetes Secrets or whichever, right? The DevOps has access to the Kubernetes secrets. Mm-hmm. What do you do? So you want to apply the same approach that I like to apply to data security, which is, you know, application layer encryption. You have an independent secret management service that encrypts secrets such as, you know, OAuth, application ID secret, or bank access private key encrypted in addition to the storage in the infrastructure service responsible for it. And that way, you need at least a collision of two different people, or a failure of two different systems to cause any kind of breach.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so basically this is where you achieve the separation of duties. the developers and the operations have access to their infrastructure secrets, but you have another layer of encryption which is in the application level, and then you store your secret, your probably the key stored where, on a different platform. That's the idea.
Absolutely. An, an issue you would often have with a younger company is that, you know, your DevOps person would have access to anything, right? And so this is one of the reasons it's very important to put these controls on data and on secrets on top.
Yeah. Okay. So let's try to summarize everything we just learned. I give you a, give us a recap and let me know if you anything else you want to add. So RiseUp is a fintech company, and a lot of fintech companies are relying on the fact that we now have open banking, which is basically means that banks need to open up and provide other companies, other financial services companies, access to the data, so you can so basically the customer can get a better service. In order to do that, you first need to work with the regulators. Regulators need to decide how the how this new companies will connect to the banks, how they authenticate, integrate, what is the vetting process, I mean, how do you approve them, probably get some kind of a license or a authority to operate, something like that. You need to work with the bank themselves, prove them that you have the ability to keep their customer secret and to keep their customer data and everything else. So you need to make sure that they trust you. And of course, you need to work with the consumer. Consumers are used to the fact that they're working with banks with all of the reputation. So again, you need to shift, give them a different mindset. You need to educate the market that, that you're also able to guard the data. So you have a lot of market education to do here with all those terms. And from the technical side, you need to basically build a company that is very resilient. Everything should be cloud native, more responsibility shifted to the cloud provider, less responsibility to you. You need to focus on creating better services. You need to work on separation of duties, monitoring, encryption, basically all of this in order to satisfy the regulator, satisfy the banks. They will be looking for evidence that you can do that. And also to make sure that the customers has a good base to trust you. Anything else you want to add?
Of course. It's been a pleasure talking, and I think this is a great time to understate how this is a huge new frontier. Fintechs we've had for a while, but financial data services, especially in Israel, is just starting to happen. And so I would love to see more companies doing cool stuff with data securely.
And just one question about that. If a new CISO to a fintech or financial data services company, what is the tip or the two that you can give them?
So I would look to establish a very good relationship with the community. I'm finding that community is super important to empower me in my role, because when you have your customers, your community tagging your CEO and asking about security, you really have very little convincing left to do, right?
Yeah.
And so that's great. Encourage a community.
Okay, great.
Perfect.
So thank you very much, Alex.
Thank you very much for your time.
It was a pleasure. Moshe, thank you very much. And to all our listeners, thank you. And until the next one. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.